Welcome to the Know It Some podcast, bringing you the widest variety of conversational interviews for a well-rounded perspective on life. Because while it's true nobody likes a know-it-all, it's also good to know it some. Here's your host, Steve Platt.
That's right. Welcome back to the Know It Some podcast. I'm your host, Steve Platt, and this week we sat down with the one and only Gary Sheffield Jr. He's a writer for both Outkick and Fox Business, and he also hosts a baseball podcast called Chef Talk. But if you follow Gary, you'll know that he covers way more than just baseball. We talk all sorts of sports. We talk some politics. We talk a little bit about the future of baseball in this podcast. And quite frankly, I had a blast with this one. Thank you so much, Chef, for coming on the show. Folks who don't know this, right? Gary Sheffield Jr., his father, Gary Sheffield, was my childhood hero. I grew up a huge Florida Marlins fan, and Gary Sheffield won a World Series in 97, but the year before that, right, he won the National League home run title, and I think I watch each and every one of those balls get launched into the stands that year. And then on top of that, the year before that, he got shot in the shoulder. So if you can imagine recovering from that, winning a home run title, and then winning a World Series the next year, that was Gary Sheffield in the 90s, and that was the reason why I wore number 10 on my jersey every chance I got. So to interview his son and see what a great man that kid has turned out to be, I followed him on social media. Gary Sheffield Jr. is someone that you all need to be following on social media, because he does not put a filter on his thoughts. He definitely is not afraid to speak his mind. And quite frankly, I think that's what we all need, is more discourse, right? More of the ability to discuss with each other and share viewpoints without, you know, name-calling and demonizing and whatever it is that people do when they find someone whose views don't agree with their own. And I'll tell you one thing is, he's always willing to listen and discuss things. He's a great follow on both Twitter and Instagram, and you're going to love this interview with the one, the only, Gary Sheffield Jr. Hey, so welcome to the show, Gary Sheffield Jr. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate you being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. Happy to talk baseball and maybe a little bit of politics.
I'll be very honest with you. I've followed you for some time, and what I found is you're not afraid to be like the most honest journalist, whether it's talking about Trevor Bauer or more recently, like your article that you wrote regarding the way that some players on the Tampa Bay Rays handled Pride Month, right? Like, you're not afraid to just be brutally open and honest, and you're not worried about cancel culture. You're not worried about what anybody else would think. You just want to do honest journalism. I find that refreshing and rare today. So I wanted to have you on more so for who you are than for who your dad was. How did you find yourself getting into being a writer?
First off, thank you for all the compliments. I don't think I'm doing that well, but in general, I'm not afraid to tell people how I feel. And in general, I'm also not afraid to hear other people's opinions. It's okay to think something else, but the issue that we have in our culture currently is that if someone else thinks something, then they're less than you. There's something wrong with them. And we call it bravery for saying what you really think. And that sucks. It shouldn't be that way. And to answer your question about how I got into this, I always knew I was social. Once I was social in baseball, I was social character on my teams all throughout college. So I knew that sports journalism was not journalism per se, but more podcasting, being on camera, talking. And it's honestly been a blast, and hopefully it grows and continues on.
For sure. I'm guessing you grew up playing more than just baseball, but I'm sure baseball was like the main focus due to the family connection there, right? Because not only is your dad, you know, Gary Sheffield, but your great uncle was Dwight Gooden. You have like baseball in your blood.
was that something that they kind of had to push you into, or was that a natural thing for you where you fell in love with the sport all on your own? How did baseball come into your life more than just watching your dad play?
I mean, I fell in love with it on my own. It was just something I was around. So you just kind of grew up and thinking, this is something I want to do. I touched into football a little bit, never too heavy, but gotcha. I just wanted to play something else, give myself a breath of fresh air. But it was always baseball. That's what it was. Committed to Florida State, ended up getting hurt. But honestly, like a lot of people are like, oh man, that sucks. It sucks. And I'm like, dude, if your life is all predicated on baseball and you can't find something else to enjoy, then you're not really living a great life anyway. So
right.
I live a great life. Just got engaged a couple days ago. So yeah, couldn't be happier.
Yeah, I saw the engagement on Twitter. Congratulations. That's pretty awesome.
thank you.
Was that a nerve-wracking moment? I'm guessing that you had it all planned out for a bit.
It was beyond nerve-wracking. I couldn't believe the whole process was just, I had all these things written down, what I was going to say. And then you get on a knee. I had three things to say. Nothing came out. And it was just the whole thing. And I wanted it to be like a one-on-one experience. In my opinion, it still went really well. She did great. So we're definitely happy.
That's awesome. And she's out there in Arizona with you?
She is.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. So you find yourself in Arizona. I'm guessing you played sports out there in college, right? You played college ball out in Arizona?
Yeah, I was playing junior college baseball in Arizona, and it was super competitive. And I actually committed to Florida State out of junior college. And then once I didn't get in after some injuries and some grade issues, I went to Arizona Christian University, which is also here, obviously. Okay. So, yeah, and it was a great experience. I met awesome people that I'll be friends with for life.
Right.
And, yeah.
So you don't miss running into Florida man when you go out and about in your daily life. You're okay out there in Arizona. It seems like you wanted to stay after school.
Yeah, no, I actually lived out here my whole life. It was always just like me and my mom. And personally, I love Arizona and I'll never leave. And
gotcha.
For anyone who's visited out here, it's just incredible, except for the economy currently, the way it's shifting.
Yeah, but you know, I think that's really a nationwide thing. I'm sure Arizona has its unique, you know, aspects to it, right? Like challenges, but really everybody's kind of experiencing some craziness with the economy right now.
I think it's California exports, a bunch of people leaving. It's really Florida as well. I mean, they're getting a lot of people from some of these various states where we're like, no, stay where you are. And they just show up here and buy with cash, and it really saturated the market.
Yep. We're getting a lot of it from the Northeast, a little bit from the Midwest. And then you guys, you and Texas both are getting a bunch of folks coming over from California.
Oh, yeah.
If anything, California is going to have to do something about it, or they're not going to have the tax income base that they used to have. You know what I mean? If you're driving away high earners, it's going to cause some problems. So, they'll figure it out for sure.
You'd think, right? I mean, it seems like it's every year we're looking at the same results, and you'd think that you'd look across the country and say, well, there's a common denominator somewhere between the states that are having people move in and the people who are leaving. And apparently half the country just hasn't drawn any conclusions, and I'm not going to yell at anyone. I'm just going to look at them and wonder when they finally open up their eyes.
Yep. Hey, you know, listening to you talk, it seems like, just like with your father, you're not afraid to express yourself. You mentioned earlier, it's not brave to just say exactly, you know, what you feel, but so many people are worried about being agreeable. They're afraid of cancel culture. They're afraid of what other people will think when they express their own ideas and opinions and thoughts. And so it's sad that it's considered brave or rare. But it's definitely not everybody, you know, that is out there and just expressing themselves without fear, right? We shouldn't be living in that world, but I definitely see it. And I remember that your dad was very much like that. He was never really afraid to express himself, you know, and he found himself being attacked by the media here and there for things that he would say. I mean, do you feel like that's something that you grew up witnessing with your mom and dad in terms of, you know, not being afraid to be an individual and not being afraid to say what's on your mind? You know what I mean? Like, is that something that maybe you grew up witnessing, or is that something that you maybe found through school? Like how did you end up becoming, you know, not just mainstream media? You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, my parents have always set a precedent, obviously, by example. Both my parents are like this, and they'll walk into a room, and if they see something they don't like, they're always going to be genuine and nice, which for the people who have met them, those people will say how nice of people they are. But, I mean, you see it unfold with Jake Paul. Jake Paul yeah. came out, I think maybe yesterday, and came out and tweeted about Joe Biden, and he listed the various things that are just unacceptable from a president of the United States. And it's like, well, look at the reaction that he's drawing just because he's asking questions or he has a certain opinion that's on one side. But his brother, Logan Paul, came out and said the exact opposite with white privilege, and everything was on the exact opposite side of the aisle. One side was praised, the other one wasn't. And when you can only say one thing to receive praise on social media, you have an idea that you're controlled. Regardless of who's right or who's wrong, if you're being praised because you said one thing and then you say something else and you're being screamed at, something's going on. And at some point, you can't feel like you're brave or you're noble when you're saying something and receiving praise, because a lot of people in history who have done amazing things were not praised in the moment of when they did stuff. And now suddenly in America today and other countries as well, people think, oh, well, I'm receiving praise, so I'm doing the right thing. And yeah, it's a lot of cowardice, and it's something I'm not willing to play.
No, I'm right with you with it. And quite frankly, like, I feel like there is a certain bowing to society pressure, societal pressure that I am witnessing amongst the people that I follow on social media, my friends' posts, the companies that I have seen that have social media presence. They want to be accepted and praised. So if the accepted view at the moment is that we should support, 9-year-olds switching genders and give them, you know, hormone therapy at 9 years old, right? Then they're afraid to say, hey, well, hold on a minute. Like, let's think this one through. It's just immediate, like, well, sure, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, let's just go with it. And at a certain point, you got to be able to say, hey, look, I don't agree with that, and without being attacked and demonized. And you know what I mean? And right now, if you disagree with any of it, you know what I mean? Like, you are essentially, I mean, people will compare you to Hitler in an instant. If you know what I mean? If you have any sort of a differing view on something. So,
I mean, at some point we have to ask, like, who do we respect? And no matter if someone agrees with me that's listening to this today, if they agree with me or disagree with me, I can ask a simple question. Who do you respect? Who do you listen to? Who can you actually respect opinion? More times than not, it's just an agreeable opinion. It's not any type of discourse. They don't have any people they respect outside of maybe Joe Rogan. Rogan, there's a reason he's the richest man in podcasting history, and he'll continue to escalate, is because he's the one guy that people are willing to listen to where they're like, yeah, he has a variance in opinion on this one topic. That's not very common in social media. And that's the reason why a lot of these people who work at ESPN, CNN, a lot of these networks, they think that people are popular, but really they're just more agreeable. They're willing to be more than the next guy. They're not really any better. And I love the idea and the premise of what Joe Rogan's doing, because Joe Rogan can just hop on. And I remember seeing that he was a Bernie Sanders voter, and I listened to one of his podcasts, maybe 2.5 hours. And the fact that I didn't just shut it off after 2.5 hours really goes to show you that he's creating discourse. And when I saw that, I was like, why don't I just try to do that in sports? And some people love it and other people are going to hate it. But to be honest with you, both people that love you and hate you are paying the bill. So whatever.
Yeah, for sure. The thing with Rogan is I don't understand the hate that comes for that man, because what I've found is he'll have, you know, people from the left and right on his show. He'll have people of all sorts of different viewpoints. He'll have Tulsi Gabbard one week and Dan Crenshaw the next. You know what I mean? Right. He'll be called a far right by some outlets and then have Bernie Sanders on. You know what I mean? It's really something else that you could say, well, he feels a certain way politically, like, right. I've heard him talk about some socialist policies that he would support. And yet at the same token, you'll have a billionaire like Elon Musk on, and people struggle to reconcile that, because in their mind, it's like, no, you could only have the team that you know, wear the jersey of, you can't have differing viewpoints. You can't have everything be heard there. And they're upset that he's giving a platform to something that differs from how they feel. And honestly, that's how it should be, is everybody should be able to, you know what I mean? Like, he should have whoever he wants on to be able to share their viewpoint and not de-platform differing views. You know what I mean?
Yeah, our country's always hated discourse. We've always hated people who bring humans together, and that not just people that agree, but people who disagree. JFK was one of those people who was trying to bring people together, and you end up dead. And they would love Joe Rogan to be dead, because they don't want him to use his platform not just to disagree, but to bring people who disagree just to hear another side, just to hear it, is dangerous from the mainstream media's point of view. And Joe Rogan is helping facilitate people to just listen. That's the most dangerous thing to our mainstream media. And the average person on social media on both sides, they don't listen to anybody that doesn't agree with them on everything. And that sucks.
It scares people that they can't control him. It scares people that he has such a following, you know what I mean? And that he can't be reined in. Right now, in the age of social media that you and I are currently living in, more so than any time in history, you can broadcast views that are not traditional mainstream media views, right?
Right.
And that scares people too, which is why you have so many people clamoring for folks to be banned from Twitter, banned from Instagram, banned from Facebook. You know what I mean? The amount of posts that get reported just because someone doesn't agree with the post is way up.
Sure
you've witnessed it too, probably. And you know, you're very young still. You know what I mean? You're not at the end of your career. And yet in your short career, you've probably witnessed people coming for your throat.
Yeah, of course. And I'd really say the two worst things I get, and sometimes people will say, hey man, I just love what you're doing. They'll say that in private. And these are people with obviously major platforms. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, you're a coward.
Right.
These people are cowards. They will enjoy the way I use my platform. And it's not like they're showering me with praise and maybe what I think on every given topic, but they just like praise the freedom that I have. And it really begs the question why nobody exercises that right to be free. And I always told myself when I was young, I wanted to be rich. I want to have as much money as possible. But the reality was I just wanted money so I could be free. And people are willing to sell their soul for money. And that includes surrendering your freedom. I'm not willing to do that. I want to do it my own way, and I'm just never changing it.
No, I hear you on that. And so you don't feel any fear at the moment that you're going to be canceled, that New York Yankee, news is going to call you up and say, hey, look, we're pulling you. You know what I mean? That doesn't enter your mind when you're writing a story?
No, I mean, I consider all those things before I sign on to a network. Is if you are working at an ESPN, ESPN has a track record of saying that Stephen A. Smith or Jemele Hill can dabble into liberal politics, but a Sage Steele or somebody else, they cannot. And so I have an understanding of where I'm going before I go. These networks that I work at, Outkick, Fox Business, if I say certain politics, they're not going to bother me. And that's a good thing. But at the same time, I mean, the goal is to have my own stuff. That way, like when you're like a guy like Joe Rogan, you're uncancelable. And now the mainstream media is starting to realize that. And their way of tackling Joe Rogan now is to try to not talk about him as much, because they know he's impenetrable. You just can't touch him.
Yeah. Right now, I feel like we're in a good spot with the way that media has evolved, and where it's not just three channels on the television anymore. You know what I mean? You're not just limited to terrestrial radio. We have podcasts and internet radio and YouTube channels and everything now, right? Where you don't have to necessarily subscribe to that in order to be a journalist, in order to be a content creator, right? People choose to, because they feel like that's the easier path and that's what's going to get them more viewership. But to your point earlier, I mean, look at Rogan, right? Not necessarily towing the line and doing just fine. doing a lot better than you and I. So I think, like you said earlier, it's just a matter of cowardice by some folks.
No, people are cowards in all wakes of life. I mean, there's people who are you can say lower class, there's middle class, all the way up to rich people behind the gate. And some people will say, well, this rich guy, why would I want to hear his politics? It's like, well, I'm hearing yours. What if you were rich? Would you not talk about politics anymore? Of course you are. If LeBron James, I mean, it was LeBron James America. And he was born in 1984. So sometime in the early 90s, he was starting to grow opinions. And he was just like you and I. And he was just a regular person. So he was living in America. He had opinions. He thought things just like you do. And then now if someone uses their platform in a way that you don't approve of, you don't want them to have a platform anymore. And I have always stressed, I don't want to deplatform anybody who disagrees with me. I want to talk to you. Yeah. I actually want to have a conversation. And if I talk to you, more times than not, by the time someone engages in a real conversation, we walk away with something productive. And America is just not doing that at all.
Yeah, it's a big issue. Right now, there is a lot of demonization from both sides of anything that differs from their view. I see it on both sides quite a bit. My issue is this, is that my wife and I are Cuban. We grew up in Miami in the Cuban culture. And what I found very interesting over the last, at least the last 6 years and probably longer, is that folks assume that because you're Hispanic, that you must support the left. You have to support the left. That's, you know, just the nature of the business, whether it's immigration policy, other things. And what they don't realize is that the Cuban culture, a huge percentage of we support the conservative viewpoint more often than not, because we saw what socialism did to our country and that island. You know, we've seen what liberal policies, let's just put it that way, can do to a country. Right. So I have seen that where people just kind of assume. Have you ever run into that where people assume that because you're Black that you must lean a certain way? Has that ever been something that you've been attacked with at all?
Well, of course. I mean, President Joe Biden, I mean, quite literally told me that if I don't vote for him, I'm not Black. And the sad part is whether 81 million people or not voted for him, millions of people still did vote for him. And there's a right. lot of people who look at their news and say, yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that statement. Statements like that are as divisive as they'll ever become. And the worst part is not only is it dividing the left away from me, which is someone who's more towards the middle, yeah. but you're making it more easy for me to turn my back on those people as well. The people who are already turning their back and calling me names, calling you out your name. And that's all of us. We all can relate to that. So yeah. it's really just become a divided America where if you don't think the way we think, you're less than. And it's so interesting because half of their ideas are premised on being accountable, being genuine, being nice, being open to new ideas. And for a group that's so open to new ideas, they sure don't like mine. And I can't understand it.
I'm right with you on it. Look, I'm a political moderate myself. You know, I tend to lean right on certain issues economically. I lean left on some issues in terms of I don't feel like I should stand in the way of gay people getting married or you know what I mean? Like there's, you know, I'm for legalization of marijuana, right? That's not exactly a conservative policy. There's a lot to a person's viewpoint if they're honest about their viewpoint and they're not just following the party that they were born into, then I feel like no one can really truly say that they're all liberal or all conservative. The problem is that we like to cheerlead for our, you know, whatever team we're a part of, right? So people don't express their viewpoints. They just follow whatever the party line is. And it leaves people like you and I kind of politically homeless in a way. You know what I mean? Because there isn't necessarily a moderate viewpoint or candidate that we can point to. Quite frankly, we keep going back to the same trough when it comes to presidential candidates.
Yeah, both sides of the part, like both sides of the political spectrum, have been coached to detect buzzwords. That I wanted to make sure that that's clear, is that we were coached to detect buzzwords, and people think that they're having nuanced conversations. But you walk into a room, say you're talking about guns. And you want to talk about school shootings, somebody wants to extend background checks or ban assault rifles or weapons altogether, they're coached to hear, oh, I'm about to hear something about Chicago. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to happen. And how do I respond to that? And we've been coached that way because the United States of America wants us to shut down. When we hear certain words, we hear Chicago, or we hear 2A, or we hear, if we hear that we need to do background checks, we all shut down. And the answer is somewhere in the middle, and we're never going to get there because this country is hardwired to just say, I'm going to spew out this garbage that someone else told me, and I expect you to come out with this rebuttal. I'm going to freak out when I hear it. I'm going to call you a name, and I'm going to go back into my corner. And that's the way
they're not even listening to what the other person is saying. They're just reading their next talking point. There's no actual active listening going on there.
Of course not. And people think that they're good listeners, but how many times just in this past 6 months have you heard something politically and said, well, that makes some sense? If you're listening to both sides and you're actually listening with your ears open and you don't hear an idea that makes some sense to you on the other side of the aisle, there's something wrong with you. And that's just the way things work. And that's why I consider myself libertarian.
Right. But
as you know, when people do run as libertarian or people say, well, I'm trying to be in the middle and bring the country together, people think that that means cowering to the other side. That's what they hear. So they will not go for it. And that's why when somebody has to run, which you will see in 2024, obviously, it needs to be someone who is far right. And that's why the country continues to just slingshot from one side to the other. One guy is just does not care about feelings, and he's only about the money in your pocket. He's all about results. And then you get someone who only cares about feelings, doesn't care about results at all, in Joe Biden. And it's unfortunate, but we're having to wait another 2 years and, you know, and some change for some results again.
Yeah. You know, the primary system set up in such a way that it's going to generate extremes as the candidate, because the way the districts are drawn up, if they're dark blue or dark red, right, it's whoever is furthest into that nook that is going to take home the nomination. And then again, in the general, it leaves us with some tough choices when you're someone who views things not in black and white and in more in shades of gray, the way that you and I do. You know, it's a tough thing. I am going to pivot away from politics for the folks that are still listening and get into some baseball with you. One of the things that we were kicking around, folks, you know, me and some of the other podcasters on my network, shout out to Lamar from the 100 Sanford, the Georgia podcast, is we've noticed like there's a decline in African-Americans in the MLB. And I didn't have like a number on it, so I just Googled it real quick, right, before the call with you. And there was somebody, and I don't know how accurate this is, but someone was claiming that there were upwards of 20% or more black players in baseball in the 1970s. And that now it's somewhere around 8% or less. And that, you know, if it was just a few percentage points apart, you could kind of just write it off as ebbs and flows that happen,
right,
you know, naturally or whatever. But to see that big of a decline, it makes me, you know, beg the question, why do you feel that maybe there's been a decline of black baseball players? And do you feel like it's an interest thing or an image thing, or, I mean, what's going on where we're seeing less of that in baseball?
I believe there's a couple pretty simple things that we're overlooking. And in baseball, especially, and this all starts with your youth, you're not going to get someone to try to play professional baseball who doesn't play when they're 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And it's just that simple. Major League Baseball players, the 99% of that base has been playing since they were 10.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it works. But to play when you're 10 to 13 to 14, for the most part, a lot of baseball players don't feel included in the game anymore if they don't play club baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing about club baseball and all these scouting department leagues, the Perfect Game Tournament, all these different leagues that you have to, a lot of times you have to travel out of state. Well, if our minority groups are more poor than another race, chances are they're not going to be able to afford all the equipment. And people underrate how expensive baseball can be. Golf is the same way. If you're paying $200 to $300 for a bat, you're paying for flights, And a lot of times your parents have to go with you. You have to pay for food when you're out of town, hotels. Everything is expensive. And in a country that's only getting more expensive, you can't expect people who are struggling to put food on the table to be able to send their kid to. And this is all races. It's always been difficult to pay for club baseball. And we always had kids on our baseball team that I believe like my mom was helping pay for and all that, just so that they can be included. But what happened if nobody helped them to be included? They would stop playing. They'd go play a sport that was more community-based. You can show up, get your pads, and go play football. Mm-hmm. It was easier. And baseball has a lot of a more of a country club feel now. And that's unfortunate. Hmm. There's still plenty minorities in the game. It's not like it's just a game filled with white people. That's not what we're looking at. But if you look in like the Dominican Republic, their baseball camps and a lot of the support systems that they see around them, that is like more of a community. The way that we base all of our community assets towards peewee football, mm-hmm. they do the same thing for baseball. And that's why we see so many of them able to bring their talents over here to the United States and dominate at this level. So yeah, to answer your question, it's finances. It's expensive to continue on and be involved. And if you don't feel involved, people will quit. And you know, and that's unfortunate.
I'm thinking about what you're saying, right? And I'm remembering like begging my parents for a new glove or a new baseball bat. Mm-hmm. I remember the equipment bag that I would have and you know, the weighted donuts and, you know, everything that goes in, new cleats, everything. But to your point, I mean, football has football pads and helmets and cleats. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And so like my whole thing, you mentioned like the financing of the equipment for the two sports and how there's a disparity there. Why is it that the community will come around a football team more than a baseball team? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's weird for me because I know that neither sport is free, but I also know that the same way that you could pick up a football with your buddies in a field and throw it around,
right?
You know, a bunch of kids in a community that's struggling can find a baseball bat to share among them. You know what I mean? And a couple gloves or whatever, and get out there on the diamond and just mess around. And the reason why I'm talking about that is just the initial interest in the sport, like the initial like spark. Yeah. Right. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned that there's a different feel and that baseball's got a more country club. And I'm wondering where that shift started to happen. You know what I mean?
No, I totally understand. And I know that they always said like, let the kids play. We're going to let the kids play. Back in like the 70s and 80s, you used to be able to handle things on the field. Guys could flip bats. You can do stuff, and it was more of a fun product. But
yeah,
now it you look at it as a kid and you think, is Major League Baseball really are they awarding me with the freedom to play this game the way that maybe my personality can fit into? And some guys are looking at it and saying no. And you also have people like Kyler Murray, who was showing up to, he was going to be a football player, was drafted by the Oakland A's. And, you know, he's going to be multimillionaire regardless of which way you cut it, whichever way he decided to go. Well, there's instant gratification with football. A lot of it, like we watch a lot of Netflix, we watch a lot of these TV shows where we get gratification immediately. Well, baseball has nothing to do with instant gratification. Kyler Murray being drafted in the first round was going to go to more than likely rookie ball for a short period of time. He's going to be on a bus and a lot of rain outs. It is a grueling experience to be in the minor leagues. And football is nothing like that. Football, you go from the draft to training camp. And of course there's some other like OTAs, but the dark days are far and few in between. Baseball is just a bunch of dark days. It's the same thing with college. You're on a bus. It's a tough experience to go through as being a baseball player. So there's just a few things in football that are just more pro player than baseball will ever be. And a lot of that has to do with money, but it also is that you can contribute at a very young age in football as opposed to baseball. So there's a lot of things working against them.
Well, you know, baseball has to be a professional baseball player doesn't necessarily mean just MLB. Like, you know, it has an extensive farm system, whereas college football, like, yeah, there are some, you know, quote unquote, D-League kind of experiences. You could play in Canada, you know what I mean? You could play overseas, but I don't feel like there's as much of, like you said, like a working up the ranks kind of a feel to football, and right. and they do get, like you said, that instant gratification. But it's a shame though, because growing up, and I didn't really realize it until I started thinking about it, like a lot of the baseball players that I idolized when I was a kid, I mean, I'm thinking Ken Griffey Jr., I'm thinking your father, for instance. You know, I watched most of his 96 campaign. He had the most home runs in the National League, and each time he hit one, it was like the greatest thing ever. You know, I remember watching Tony Gwynn and Barry Bonds and all these, and I look now, and it's a different makeup of the sport. And I'm not necessarily saying it's an all white league by any means, right? There's a lot of Hispanic players and everything, but mm-hmm. it's definitely changed. And I think baseball is a great sport that anybody should have access to. And you know, my concern was, well, maybe it's an access issue, like you said, like to get the equipment and to get you know, baseball fields that are taken care of in these communities and that kind of thing. You know what I mean? So
it's also exposure. I mean, exposure is huge for minority communities. I mean, if you're talking about exposure, I mean, look at golf.
Right.
And the reason the game of golf grew, well, COVID really helped. A lot of people got golf clubs, and it was one way that they can get involved without really having to, I guess, go out. But we also had Topgolf, and they made more of a casual experience where people would go hang out with their friends, maybe have a drink or two, and you'd hit a ball, and all of a sudden someone says, I really like this. Mm-hmm. I actually like this. Why don't we go play? And next thing you know, you can't even get a tee time. They didn't necessarily have to go budget and do all this stuff and throw money at the YMCA, like all these cliche things that people say we should do. But they were literally able to grow the game just through an entertainment value. And people are like, I like this.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully we can do that, you know, with the Black community and get them more involved in baseball the way they were, because, you know, it sucks. So of course, and it's not just Black people. It's if there's any race that's really disappearing from a game, then you would like to fix that in some form or fashion.
Right.
It just doesn't really matter who it
especially
is.
A game it just that, so happens to be that Black much, people. Yeah. A game that's that much fun to play, especially in your youth, even if you're not going to make it a career, you take that away when they don't have the same role models. If there's no Ken Griffey Jr., if there's no Gary Sheffield, you get me?
Right.
And so like that's a huge concern. And then the other thing is, you know, you're being forced to specialize and pick a sport younger and younger. You know, you used to have, you know, Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders, and you could dual sport in professional sports. And then, you know, that got harder and harder to where nobody really does it. You could then right. dual sport in college. Tons of people used to do that. I mean, if you look back, there were people that did that regularly, and now that's frowned upon because college is becoming more of a business, and they want you know, to eat, you know, drink and sleep football or whatever, right? And I think I'm seeing it in high school now, where there's people who are saying, you know, I gotta give up these other sports even now, even in high school, because I want to make sure that I get offers from Alabama and Georgia. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they want to be high on those lists.
It's sad, but people are being forced to specialize, and they're not able to be a kid and kind of have fun and play a few different sports at the high school level, even, you know.
If you don't specialize, I mean, people want to know that they're on the All-American top four, top five, all these lists that, and people get, especially like Instagram and all the Twitter gratification. And I'm not here to say that the gratification's bad, because I mean, it's not like it's not fun to get a dopamine rush, but
right.
at the same time, if you don't specialize, chances are you're just a bubble on both sides. So someone wants you to specialize, put everything you've got into one thing and hope that it pans out. And for a lot of people, they put all their eggs in one basket and they didn't get a chance to try anything else.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's true. I don't know what needs to change. You know, baseball used to be considered America's pastime. It feels to a lot of folks that it's gotten passed up by football, you know, the NFL, by college sports. I think the viewership numbers, if you look at it, data, right? Like, I think baseball has fallen behind a number of other sports. It's no longer the top dog like it once was. And, you know, wanted to ask you what you thought baseball could do to change its image, or what it needs to do, what needs to change for them to kind of retake the throne, if you will.
Well, I think Major League Baseball is actually working against themselves at this point. And because, and what I mean by that is that people like Rob Manfred, who obviously became commissioner sometime in the past decade, one of the first things he said when he came into the game of baseball is that he wanted to speed up the game. So by definition, he was telling people, we're here too long. I don't know many other successful sports leagues who come in and say, yeah, we're just here too long. I think if we can get you guys out of here and into the parking lot in 3.5 hours, I think we're doing our job. Hockey doesn't do that. The people in hockey are talking about fighting. We want to see fights. We want to see skill. We want to see more of the players. We want to see more of Connor McDavid. Major League Baseball is doing no such thing. They're trying to tell us, yeah, we understand, you know, you got busy lives and we don't want you at the yard for 4 hours. When I was a kid, and as you said before, we even hopped on and you're like, yeah, my first memory of baseball was in the 96 World Series, 97 World Series for the Marlins. No one was talking about game times in 1997. We were excited to be at the yard. But now suddenly the people who are leading, who are supposed to be helping this game grow, are trying to figure out ways to get us home faster.
Yeah,
you're not going to grow this game by doing that. The whole messaging is just whack. And they need to find people who actually love baseball. And just the only efforts you should be doing is to make it more entertaining, like adding DH or maybe adjustments to the shift, whatever the case may be. But it should have nothing to do with the fact that things the way they were bad. That's just not the correct messaging. And it's only going to bring this game backwards.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel that there's enough involvement from former players to try to bring the game back to where it was? Do you think that that's even something that's needed? Because it shouldn't rest on them, but certainly I'm sure the alumni from the MLB can be a force. Do you feel like there's enough concern from those folks?
You know, it's almost like the NBA. The alumni in Major League Baseball and in the NBA almost feel like they were overrun by analytics. And analytics are a good thing. True. I keep trying to tell people that. Analytics are still a good thing. They always will be, and we'll continue to correct them. But at the same time, it's almost like we turned our back on the alumni and their way of playing the game and their way of viewing it from their – seeing it from their point of view and saying, how can I use my brain to impact the sport? And that's why – Major League Baseball was America's pastime. It was a thinking man's game. You see someone do something, you rebuttal with another. And now baseball is less of an adjustments game and more so a man's game. And now it's like, hey, we're all trying to do the same thing all at once, and whoever does it better wins. And yeah, that's the material. And I think that the average fan is feeling that on screen. And the only real way to enjoy the game of baseball is to actually be there. And people are there less than they've ever been there. So
it's a shame.
I understand why.
Some of these newer ballparks are gorgeous. Like the new Marlins Stadium is way too beautiful for the crowds that it gets and the support that it gets from the community. And I don't really necessarily blame them the way the organization has been run, but you know, quite frankly, like you said, they're less and less there. They rather just catch it on TV if they catch it at all. And they're missing out because the environment at a baseball game, if you're at the right park, you know what I mean? It can be electric.
Oh, it's amazing, dude. And to really wrap up my point, I mean, it's just, you need to embrace analytics. I mean, if you're going to turn your back on analytics, you're not going to be in this game very long. But at the same time, if somebody who's been in the game for 30 or 40 years, maybe a former player, someone like my dad or Jeter or CC right. Sabathia, when they open their mouth, they're opening their mouth from experience. And that those experiences have to matter. And at no point in the history of baseball have personal experiences mattered any less to the community of baseball than it does today. And that should tell you where we are. And if the old heads are being shunned away the way that they are currently, we're doing something really wrong.
Yeah. I mean, not to make you speak for your father, but I mean, does he feel like the game's changed?
Well, he knows that, you know, of course, like the rules are all the same for the most part. And he can see that velocity's changed. And of course, I'll have him answer this for himself. But at the same time,
he's always welcome to, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I'm just like, I'm sure like the way he sees it is that Major League Baseball is going to change and the front offices are going to change the way that they see fit. You know, you don't have any control as a former player of where the game goes. I mean, my dad's not the president of Major League Baseball, neither is Derek Jeter or any of the other guys. But you have to look at it and say, where's my niche if I come back to the game of baseball and I open my mouth? Is it being listened to? Is it going to be supported? Is it going to be influential in, you know, maybe my dad or these various other players don't feel that their words are as influential as they ever, as they normally would have been, then you won't get involved. You don't see much involvement from really any player.
I think you're right. Because I think back in the day, right, like if a retired, you know, Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle came out and started speaking on the sport, right, it mm-hmm. would carry some weight. And then nowadays, like, they've been drowned out by the business. If, you know, you mentioned analytics, you know, people love certain aspects of that. They, you know, I think Moneyball, the movie, kind of opened people's eyes to how that can be utilized. And that's great and all, but by the same token, like, there has to be like that old school feel of the game, you know what I mean, of this America's pastime kind of, I don't know, there is something missing. I think there's something that can be done to bring it back, and I'm just not sure what that would be.
Yeah, it seems like the people in the game now are like, we can move on without you. We've got all the information we need, and we've got all the data we need. Well, you still need the minds of the greatest players of all time. You still need them. The mentality that Pete Rose does talk about, I mean, he talked about it live on broadcast with Alex Rodriguez. That mentality of, he's like, lead with the knob and all these things. And of course, there's plenty of other details that he worked into his career. But analytics cannot just compensate for all that information that's in his head. That's what people don't understand. And in football, more so. But all these other sports that are doing really well, you see guys like Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky is the greatest hockey player who ever lived. He's on broadcast all the time. I hear him speak all the time. Then you look in the NBA, how many times do we hear from Michael Jordan? Never. We never hear from Michael Jordan. We never hear from my dad.
You know, in the NFL, you hear from them all the time. You hear from
all the time.
You know, whether it's recent, I say alumni, recent former players like the Manning brothers, or you go back to Terry Bradshaw, and you could go even further back. They're present and they're heard from and they're there. But I think baseball has forgotten that aspect and they've drowned it out. And, you know, you brought up the Pete Rose segment. That's one of the greatest segments, if anybody listening hasn't seen it, of Pete Rose talking through his swing with Alex Rodriguez. It's beautiful to watch. But there's not anywhere near enough of that in baseball. And I think
there were things that A-Rod disagreed with.
Yeah.
Well, A-Rod literally looked at him and was like, why would you do that? He goes, well, this is the result that it gave me.
Yeah.
Well, that's valuable information. And what it does is it's maybe it's not right. Maybe it's not. But here's the thing. It gets people more interested in the details. And now people don't care about details. They don't want to hear what anyone's got to think or say. They just say, well, what do the guys in the suits in the front office think? And whatever they think, we're going with. And there's really no passion there. There's no passion because the people who are so invested in analytics, like, they don't care about anything else other than analytics. They never played. They never played baseball. And that's unfortunate, because if people who are running a sport never played, you're going to have poor results. And that's why Major League Baseball is going one direction and the NFL is going another.
Yeah. You know, those disagreements in style and in technique, that's what makes the game beautiful. That uniqueness that you're talking about earlier in terms of A-Rod disagreeing with Pete Rose, and they're both incredible players in their own right. You know what I mean? Both should be Hall of Famers, in my opinion. Right. And when I grew up, we had that, okay? We had, your dad had a very interesting batting stance, that timing of the bat. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Hideo Nomo's windup. I know you're a little younger than me, but I'm sure you've seen Hideo Nomo pitch.
Yes.
You know, he's facing straight to center field right before he throws. These unique little aspects are not only great for the game, but it's great for the kids that are coming up and learning about baseball for the first time, because they mimic and imitate and they think it's cool. You know what I mean? To have like these unique things. I remember very distinctly getting yelled at for imitating your dad's batting stance yeah. as a kid. So, you know, those kinds of things, I hope we haven't lost them from the game. Really and truly, I hope that that we can get back to the baseball that you know, your dad, your great uncle, all these people fell in love with, that you fell in love with, that I fell in love with, and that we can really maintain it as a huge national sport in spite of what, you know, Major League Baseball as an operation, as a business, has been doing to.
Yeah. Major League Baseball is just in a position where some things work for certain guys. I mean, my dad did the bat waggle. You got yelled at for doing it. Most people will get yelled at or DFA'd or cut, whatever you want to call it, lose your scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it works. But the thing about baseball that makes it so great is that we all get a chance to do it our own way. Well, in today's game, there are more similarities between each player than there's ever been.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you're less inspired to be yourself and to do something different. And when you can't be different, you'll go play a sport where they say, that guy does things his own way and it works for him. And we're going to actually applaud that.
Yeah. That is the perfect way to see it. And I think that's where I want to wrap this up, is on that note, because that's what we need. I think it's great what you're doing. I'm definitely going to let you plug your show on here. But I just want to say first, congratulations again on the engagement. You know, I wish you the very, very best. And like I said, you know, I still rep number 10 in honor of your dad on the Marlins. He's doing well, really and truly. And, you know, tell the people where they can find you.
Well, first off, thank you so much. We're incredibly excited about the engagement. Now we have to deal with all the wedding. So it's going to be hectic as can be. But if anyone wants to find me, they can find me at Gary Sheffield Jr. on all platforms, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. And you can also find me on YouTube at Chef Talk. And so if you can look up those, you'll find pretty much all of my work. And we're having an event at Yankee Stadium for our podcast. We've got like over 150 people coming.
Nice.
And we're obviously going to meet everybody. It's going to be a blast. So yeah, no, thank you so much for having me.
It's been a fun hang for sure. And I'm going to drop all that in the show notes. So folks, go ahead and check them out. Follow them on social media. You will not be disappointed. You're going to probably get the most unfiltered coverage of baseball and sports in general that you've ever gotten. So much, and have a good one, man. Thanks.
And that'll do it for another episode of the Know It Some podcast. My thanks again to this week's guest, Gary Sheffield Jr. I really enjoyed our conversation, and you are always welcome back on the show. Folks, if you have not done so already, go ahead and give him a follow. He is Gary Sheffield Jr. on both Twitter and Instagram. And while you're at it, make sure that you're following us at Know It Some Pod at your favorite social media platform. That's Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, you know, YouTube, you name it. We are there at Know It Some Pod. And by liking and sharing our posts, it's going to help us continue to book incredible guests week in and week out. Another way to support the show would be to give us a 5-star ranking or review on Apple, iTunes, Spotify now allows it. Make sure that you're out there giving us that 5-star ranking and review. That is going to also help us continue to grow the show and bring you incredible interviews. I really appreciate all the support. Thanks for all of you who have written in and reached out. We are going to continue to do our best to bring you the greatest interviews. And I always will welcome the feedback. Make sure that you write in to us either by DMing us on social media or by sending us an email. Our address is knowitsomepod@gmail.com. Appreciate all the support. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.